Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts, Podcast 742, live from an undisclosed location in western Wisconsin, about 60 miles south of Superior, Wisconsin. And I want to talk about two different things. First of all, this was the day we were all supposed to die. This was going to be the end of the world, July 27th, 2018, with the blood moon and the eclipse that took place over Europe and Africa and the South Pacific on this day. And we are still here. In fact, there's a beautiful full moon up there. The second thing I want to talk about is economic growth. And I'm going to tell you why I'm in western Wisconsin. And we're going to have, you know, I call these consolidation podcasts where I just, every now and then, I just got to do a walk and talk. So that's what we're going to do in podcast 742. Well, there's a chill in the air out here in western Wisconsin. I'll tell you where I am in a second. But, yeah, I'm a little worried. Usually about this time of the year, it's heating up. And I actually have a jacket on, and it's probably 60 degrees out here, which is very weird. But, you know, the thing that's really weird about it is that the humidity is pretty much gone from the air. Driving up here this evening, I actually had the heat on, and I had the windows down, you know. But the air was actually cool enough that I had to have the heat on, so I kept a steady. I was driving in my bare feet, so I had to keep some steady heat on the feet, so to speak. But I bring this up because, you know, usually this time of the year, I'm talking about air conditioning when it comes to Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for home or business. But this kind of weather, really, I hate to say this, and we aren't even at the state fair yet, makes me think about fall. Because when it comes to keeping all of your systems operating, especially these days at home or business, you got to have somebody who knows how to fix this stuff and make it right, whether it's plumbing, heating, air conditioning, whatever. You want reliable service, and that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan goes back four generations in Frogtown in St. Paul. What do? Well, you know by now, if you listen to the Bob Davis podcast, they do quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. If you own property, you know, you can try to fix this stuff yourself, but I can't, you know, I go out with Greg Ryan at least once a week, and we often share little stories about, you know, plumbing stories, and, you know, there's ways to fix things, and there's ways to fix things, and that's why you call somebody that knows what they're doing, and I'm talking about Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. The cool weather, I hate to say it, makes me think about the you know, the heating checks, and we'll be doing that soon here. So don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for home or business. You can check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Now, this year, I'm not going to the air show because I have lots of business stuff to do, and I'm going to miss it. You know, I've been hearing military jets fly over my house, and I've been hearing, you know, warbirds fly over the house, and it really makes me homesick for EAA. Probably the one of the best summer events in the entire, you know, United States all summer. And if you're a pilot and you're going over there, if you're going to fly over, you know that the tower is the busiest airport in the world for 10 days. And, you know, you can get pretty scared flying into EAA because it's pretty busy. Here's the thing. The reason I'm talking about this is because that final turn before you land can be very, very dangerous because your wing can stop producing lift. And you want to have some kind of indicator in the cockpit, a visual indicator of how much lift that wing is producing to stay safe. Well, there is one, and it's called the Alpha Systems AOA, Angle of Attack Indicator, because it saves lives. The bottom line is that for general aviation aircraft, Alpha's AOA saves lives. Click on the Alpha Systems banner for more information about Alpha's revolutionary Angle of Attack Indicator at the BobDavisPodcast.com. If you're going to the show, Alpha is in Building C. See Mark Korn do his thing. It's pretty amazing. And, you know, I'm not a pilot, but I stand in that booth and I listen listen to these pilots talk to Mark about why the AOA they have in their plane is so useful and so important for saving lives, because you've got a visual indicator of how much lift your wing is producing. It's FAA approved. Just click on the Alpha Systems banner for more info. And if you're flying over there, visit Mark in Building C and enjoy the show. So it's weird how you get used to your environment and your home and your place and your neighborhood. And it becomes very comfortable and you're not self-conscious at all. So I'm in western Wisconsin, 60, 70 miles south of Superior, and I'm at a friend's cabin, and I'm going to tell you why I'm here shortly. But, you know, I've started and stopped this podcast a couple times. First of all, I'm whispering because when I do walk and talks around my neighborhood, it is so loud that I can talk literally in a normal tone of voice, and I'm not worried about anybody hearing me or anything like that. It is so quiet here that I feel very self-conscious, and I have to almost whisper. So this whole podcast is going to be me whispering, because it's like 12:30 or so, and I don't want to wake anybody up. Let me just set the stage. So it's a beautiful moonlit night. We have pine trees, and we have all kinds of trees. This desolate road through this little lake area in western Wisconsin. The cabins are not real big. Some of them are pretty old, and they're fairly closely packed. And these cabins are on the shore of the lake, and then it's a very narrow shore, so the road is literally right by the front door of the cabin, or the back door, depending on how the cabin's oriented. So there's probably, you know, it's like a typical housing development, in the sense that there's, you know, a row of cabins along here. Some of them are new, some of them aren't so new. I'm parked, Mobile Podcast Command is parked right next door to my friend's cabin, because the guy that owns that cabin is from Cincinnati, and he's out of town, and they're working on that cabin. So it's kind of muddy over there, but Mobile Podcast Command won't fit in my friend Bob's driveway anyway. So my truck is parked over there. And again, it's weird because I feel self-conscious, and usually I don't feel self-conscious when I do walk and talk podcasts. That's the whole point of taking the mic and going out. But part of it is, you know, it's a new area for me. But the second part of it is, I just want you to listen, because it's really quiet out here. And again, in 3 or 4 months, you're going to wish that you bottled this sound. Well, actually, we have, in podcast form. You know, and I just think it's so interesting that silence is what you come up here for, right? It's the peace and quiet. We don't realize how loud the city is, and we don't realize how loud we talk in this city to be heard over this din and this noise wherever you go. You know, if you listen to my podcast, you know that around my house, it's just constantly, you know, planes are taking off and landing, and there are, you know, garbage trucks and people, you know, driving up and down the street. And there's some kids that live across the way, and they make all kinds of noise, even when I'm out doing my podcast at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. Here, you know, even the drunks next door are, those guys have been partying all day, and they're actually kind of quiet and sedate now. So it's real, real quiet. But yeah, loved the podcast that I did with the YouTube excerpts about the end of the world. And of course, it didn't happen. And that's why I did that, because I want a record of that. And here's what will happen on YouTube, just FYI. So they won't put anything up for a while. You won't see any end of the world videos until the next waypoint, you know, when they feel like they can get away with it. So it'll be 3 to 6 months, and then you'll start to see the event videos start to crop up again, and the videos about, you know, the end of the world coming start to crop up again. And then they'll reach a crescendo, because someone will set a date, and everyone else will jump in, and they'll set a, you know, create a crescendo, and then it will be over with again. So life goes on, and for me, that's just a ton of fun to just monitor that. That's kind of part of the mission of the Bob Davis podcast, to monitor the doomers and their constant need to set a date and time as though anyone knows, either for the return of Christ or some energetic event to take place or something along those lines. So that's that, and now we're off on the next step. I will say, one of the things they did say is they said that this eclipse is going to dump a ton of energy and force for change in the world. I don't know. You know, I saw this great video on YouTube today in which a physics professor, and I couldn't believe this because I actually said this. So there's this whole thing in the metaphysical community about 5D, the 5D world and the 3D world, and they all claim it's based on science. And the science is that quantum theory, postulates that there may be as many, there is a theory, not proven, but it's a theory, a working theory that postulates that there could be as many as something like 12 dimensions. And my understanding is that the dimensions are necessary for the math to work, but that doesn't mean that you can live in five dimensions, right? And there's a video of Deepak Chopra, who's one of the best snake oil salesmen on the planet, with the exception of Elon Musk. Oddly enough, here comes a car, I must attract this wherever I go. So Deepak Chopra is going on and on about being an infinite human being and everything else. And so this physics guy, this physicist gets up and says he wants to ask a question, and just kind of demolishes Chopra because he says, basically, you're welcome to come and take a theoretical physics course because what you're saying is not proven on any level by mathematics. It's a great little video. Just search Deepak Chopra takes question from theoretical physicist on YouTube, and you should be able to find this video. And it's funny because, these people believe that quantum physics supports all this metaphysical stuff about being interdimensional human beings and things of that nature. And it seems like something that would be cool to believe. And it's, again, it's like all these things that you have to believe in. It doesn't necessarily make them true. So you have to take it on faith that A, B, or C is true, not because science supports it. And so that's why I do that, because I think somebody should be taking and keeping track of what they're all saying as though it's real. You know, you're supposed to just simply accept that this stuff is actually happening and that it's real. And, it's something that you have to take on faith. Now, if you want to believe that, that's fine with me. But, you know, we're supposed to take that stuff on faith, and I don't think that's right. So now I'm walking down through the cabin that's getting worked on. And I'm just going to walk down to the water here if I can, so I can sit down here by the lake and kind of see what's up with that. Yeah, and it's not to criticize or say these people are wrong or anything like that. I just think it's important to point out that there's no theoretical, physical, scientific basis for a lot of what is being said. As far as the religious stuff is concerned, you know, there's certainly no... that's all interpretation of the Bible, and the Bible can be interpreted in many different ways, even though I know that there are people, evangelists will say, oh, no, that's not true. There's only one way. But, you know, I don't need to go back into all that because I talked about that ad infinitum in the last podcast. So I'm walking down to the water here, and I'm going to go out on this little dock. This is weird because the other place where I go, is not as rough as this. So I've never been here, so I'm really taking it easy here because I don't want to end up in the water. Then I can just sit down here. So this is the new pontoon. Oh, that's her pontoon. So there's a pontoon boat here and some other stuff. Thank God I've got a flashlight. So... let me set my cup of coffee down. And now I'm sitting on the dock, and the water is absolutely glass smooth. It's beautiful. The moon is out shining on the water. I've got a fresh cup of coffee. And why am I doing this podcast? I've decided to do this podcast tonight because I wanted to quickly talk about the GDP numbers that were released on Friday. You may or may not have heard about that. This podcast is going to post probably Saturday afternoon or Sunday. And it's just a quick one-off because it's really, really important to discuss the fact that the second quarter GDP is 4.1%, which is at least 2% higher than the first quarter and 3.5% higher than the fourth quarter of 2017. And I think, aside from the economic questions, which I'll get to real quick, you know, I've been skeptical of economic growth, and I have said I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's things are, they say the economy's booming. I don't know if I would say that, but we won't know, and we shouldn't say it until we actually get some numbers. Well, here's the thing that's significant about that. Now we have the numbers. The 4.1% GDP growth is considerably high. I don't know if it's historically the highest, you know. You know, Trump tries to ballyhoo it and make it sound like it's much greater than anything that ever happened before. I seem to recall a 4.6% GDP growth quarter during the Bush administration, and I seem to recall almost. I think I recall that Obama may, and I use this lightly because this is a memory. I don't have notes. I think Obama had a 5.2% GDP growth. Right after the stimulus in something like 2009 or 10. And everybody said, oh, you know, he fixed it. And then we slid back into this very slow growth since. So we've had what some have referred to as the plow horse economy for any number of years. Trump becomes president. We pass a tax bill. He does a few executive orders on regulation, kind of letting business up easy. I've told you about how he's appointed people in these regulatory agencies that really are not real big on enforcement, or they've leaned way back on enforcement of regulations. And that is what you often hear business people talk about. And I want to talk about this from a political perspective, not from an actual economic perspective, because in the next few weeks, you're going to be hearing about why this isn't that big of a deal, you know, or you're going to hear that it actually should be much higher because people were repatriating, you know, billions and billions and millions of dollars back to the United States under the new tax bill. Foreign countries were buying up tons of American goods in the first quarter because they thought that tariffs were going to be imposed. So there are some, you know, special conditions which are going to be talked about over the next few weeks. So if you don't like the president and you don't like what he's doing, then you can talk down the 4.1% just as much as he's going to talk it up and just as unreasonably. I look at it this way. It is what it is. You know, according to what I read today very briefly, consumer spending was up and investment is up. Those two things were up considerably. Also, government spending is up. So between those three things, that's how you get GDP growth. Government spending is a component of gross domestic product. So that's one of the ways to get GDP growth. And it's very interesting to hear people who are against Republicans and against the president. Again, I'm not shilling for them. I'm not saying that what they're doing is right or not. But it's interesting to hear them suddenly talking about how they are deficit spending to the tune of $1.7 or $1.8 trillion to provide the tax cut. And that's a bad thing, even though that's exactly what President Obama did in terms of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. It's just that it was government spending. So we will have to see what happens in the next quarter, and we're not going to know that for quite some time. So the third quarter will tell the story, and if we drop back in the third quarter and drop further back in the fourth quarter, well, then we're going to end up with what we've had for several years, which is 2.5 to 2.6 to 2.7 to 2.1 to 2% economic growth. But I want to talk about what the effect is going to be politically in this podcast, because I think that's probably the most important thing. This comes at a time when it seems like many of Trump's quote-unquote accomplishments are kind of exaggerated, to say the least. You know, the agreement with North Korea, which is not an agreement. Supposedly, the same thing happened with the Europeans in trade. And supposedly, the same thing happened with Russia. They didn't agree or disagree. They didn't really accomplish anything with the meeting other than, you know, it was two leaders who met and, you know, would be perceived or used to be perceived as enemies. I don't have the time to get into the dynamics of that at all. Here's what I'm going to say about 4.1% economic growth. So now that he has had one quarter of economic growth and substantial economic growth, 4% is a lot. It certainly isn't unprecedented in the last 20 years, in the last 8 years, and the last 8 years before. So in the last 16 years since 9/11, having 4% or 5% economic growth for one quarter is not completely unexpected or unusual. It certainly has not been the norm. So it's well above the norm. And politically, this is going to help him a lot. It's going to help him. I don't believe that we will have third quarter numbers until after the election. So this is going to help him because now suddenly Republicans have a story to tell when they go out and they talk about the fact that the tax cut has produced repatriation and investment. The tax cut has helped consumer growth. See, we cut taxes and consumers start to spend. It's always better when you give people back their money and so forth and so on. So it helps the Republican narrative, at least in the short term. I don't know how closely people follow these things. You've heard my caveats. I said, look, if the new numbers come out and it's 4.1 or 5% growth, then good for him. He gets to take credit for that. He's the president, and you know it occurred on his watch, and he's going to do that. And the same with the current Republican, you know, Congress and Senate, the House and Senate. They're going to go out and they're going to, talk up the numbers, and they're going to say, look, you know, we told you we were going to do this, and we did, and we fixed it, and you know, they're going to say the economy is booming. Not really true. It's better than it was, and we have to see a third and fourth quarter consistently to know if we are expanding. I will tell you that there are a number of things on the horizon that some people are talking about as of concern, one of which is that unemployment is reaching the bottom and can't go much lower, and that's usually an indication that we may be in line for a contraction. There's some discussion about the bond market indicating that, and I don't want to get into the technical stuff because no one understands the bond market, least of all me. I just know what they're saying, and that the bond market is the yield curve is inverting, and that is an indicator that a recession is near. And then finally, with all the tariffs and quote-unquote trade protection that people are talking about and that the president seems to be interested in pushing, well, then one wonders whether that will, you know, tamp off any kind of economic growth in the third and fourth quarter in this year. But I think politically it helps him turn a corner, because that was the one thing that some people could say he hasn't really done that much. Well, now he has a feather in his cap, and that's going to come in really handy for him. And it's gonna help the story that tax cuts produce economic growth, and it's going to support that story as the Republicans, are desperate right now in some of these races, very tight races. They're going to be desperate to show that they've accomplished something and that it's a positive thing. And what's interesting is that's up against a decided democratic socialist approach to economics and a socialist approach to society, by the Democrats right now. Certainly there are centrist Democrats who don't think that people like the young woman who won in the Queens Bronx district in New York, knocking off a long-term Democrat, Joe Connolly, I think his name was, Her name is Cortez, and she's touring the country with Bernie Sanders and others, trying to buoy up, you know, Democrat candidates and left-wing Democrat socialist candidates. Really populist, left-wing populism is what it is all over the country. And they're selling, you know, free health care, single-payer health care specifically. Which would mean that you'd get a federal insurance card like they have in Canada or Britain, and you just go in and you wouldn't have to pay for it. They're pushing universal basic incomes, which really aren't universal basic incomes, by the way, because my son is studying that issue, and what they're pushing is really not UBC, purely UBC. A pure UBC would be the elimination of all kinds of federal programs and state programs for child support, AFDC, you know, unemployment, all of that would be eliminated, and we'd all get a check for a minimum basic income. And that is quite controversial. What the Democrats are proposing is they sort of use, you know, universal basic income as an idea to hook you, and then they start talking about that as an addition to a lot of these other programs. But so UBC, free college, free health care, having the post office be a bank as well for the people in all over the country who can't apparently use banks, and all these other things. So we really have a truly different, two different real paths, and they're both populist paths. One is trade protectionist, but it's combined with this weird tax-cutting, thing and lower regulations and trade protection to protect American jobs. And then on the left, you have them pushing all the way over to basically the government providing every service it possibly can, including banking at the post office and UBC and free college and free health care. So it's going to be very interesting to hear what people do. So what am I doing here in Wisconsin? And this gets kind of speaks to that issue, because the beginning of populism in this country was the rural farm communities at the turn of the 20th century, when Eastern manufacturing interests and Eastern business interests and banking interests had created a situation that many farmers didn't feel that they could join in, that it was a banking system and a business system set up for American manufacturing. And one of the features at that time was high tariffs for manufacturing items to protect American industrial progress. So steel and other types of products were protected by high tariffs, and the Republicans were in favor of the high tariffs, right? And the farmers were taking it in the shorts, and so we had things like the Grange, which really was a truly socialist movement in North and South Dakota and Western Minnesota and throughout the Midwest, the populists. So I'm talking about Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, North and South Dakota. The socialism and populism, really took hold in this part of the country so long ago. So I've decided to kind of investigate the farming thing a little bit, and I'm going to start with my friend Bob, who is I like to refer to him as a gentleman farmer. And we got this idea because I'm trying to set up a meeting with some farmers over in Western Wisconsin. Now, these guys are farming 30,000 acres. They're really big farms. And one guy is a farm insurance guy. One is a crop insurance guy. One is a banker. And a couple of them are major farmers over in Western Wisconsin. And they're just regular guys. But what I want to do is kind of a couple of podcasts that feature this this agricultural question, because, you know, I can't answer. I can tell you that farmers are having a hard time. They were already having a hard time before the tariffs went into effect. And what I'm saying about the tariffs is, so President Trump issued tariffs, you know, within his executive power related to, I believe, national security type issues regarding trade. That's kind of playing fast and loose. And there's some discussion in the Senate about sort of clipping his wings along those lines. But the idea was that You know, he was going to raise these tariffs to try to get Canada in particular to do something, and China to do something about the tariffs that they're charging us. Well, they retaliated by slapping tariffs on agricultural products. And of course, Canada, you know, retaliated pretty strongly against American dairy farmers and American soybean farmers and corn farming, you know, so grains, soybeans, dairy, and so forth. And that really is Western Wisconsin. And so we're going to start with Bob, who's the gentleman farmer. And what he has is an organic farm. And it's not big at all. It's a small, tiny little farm. But he's got some really interesting ideas about what he's trying to do with it and how they're going to monetize it. And they have a little stand, and people come on Saturday mornings. And so I'm doing this podcast real quick so I can go back to the truck here and take a nap, because I'm going to have to get up pretty early and be over there pretty early to see what goes down at the gentleman farmer's farm. And we're going to start with that. Organic farming is becoming a big thing, and small sort of hobby farms are also becoming a big thing. They have a completely different business model and a completely different approach to farming versus the, you know, actual, I like to call them real farmers. The guys who are farming 30, 40,000 acres, 10,000 acres, 5,000 acres over there in Western Wisconsin. So we're going to do that at some point here. I may not be able to get that done next week, but we'll start with the gentleman farmer, and that's going to be the next podcast. So those are two updates, you know, the GDP update and, of course, the end of the world update. I think I'm a little surprised. I didn't think it was going to be as high as it was. I didn't trust the Atlanta Fed, which was predicting something like 5% growth. And this is where you're going to hear the negatives are, well, it wasn't what they said it was going to be. You know, 4.1% growth is pretty good. So in the wake of this, you're looking at possible interest rate increases continuing, and the big concern now being inflation. So that's a big issue. We'll see what happens in the third quarter, because I believe we're in a critical period in economic history for this country. So I'm watching this very closely. But what I'm not going to do is tell you what's going to happen. I refuse to predict the future. I refuse to tell you Trump's an idiot or Trump's a genius. You're going to have to figure that out for yourself. I just think, you know, 4.1 is one of those numbers that we should be happy when it goes up. We should be happy, and we'll take it. And that's the way I feel about the GDP. I mean, there are things you can point to that you can say, okay, this is good news. But I think where you're really going to see it is in the political stuff. You're really going to see this very strong. They're going to raise money on this, both sides. So be prepared for that. And we're going to the farm tomorrow. So thanks for listening to podcast 742. Don't forget about Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. I'm going to mention it because it's cool, and you'll be thinking about it. And I don't mean cool as in, you know, hot, interesting, whatever. I mean cool as in it's cooling off, and frighteningly. In fact, we were talking tonight at dinner that it seems like we're about to have fall a little sooner than we thought. So I'm just going to quickly remind you, because you may be thinking about it, heating checks. I'm sorry to say, check out Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for heating checks. You can check them out online at ryanplumbing.com or call 651-224-4771 in St. Paul, and in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan Plumbing and Heating at ryanplumbing.com. Got to take this time to tell you I really appreciate the people that are listening to the Bob Davis Podcast at thebobdavispodcast.com off the stream. Thanks for listening on Stitcher.com for Android devices, iTunes, of course, for iPhones, Tuned In, blogtalkradio.com, Google Play, Spreaker, lots of other places where people get the podcasts, Podbean, Podcatcher. You can set it up to get the RSS feed from the Bob Davis Podcast. I see a lot of those on my analytics. And I appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and the following on Facebook and Twitter, and for your donations to keep Mobile Podcast Command running and being able to head out and do cool things like this in Western Wisconsin today and tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the BobDavisPodcasts.com. Podcast 742 live from the forest. We have to be very quiet, and the lakes.
Yeah.